be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're talking the West Indies winning in Southampton over an England side that didn't pick Stuart Broad because they wanted to win at the Gabba in 2021. Jason Holder's six for Jermaine Blackwood's 95, England's batting woes, and Shannon Gabriel hitting the stumps endlessly. Jason Gillespie is on the show to talk coronavirus, Jofra, and Rodney Hogg saying all lives matter. Monty Panesar makes his debut on the podcast to talk about rare units, nightclubs, circuits, and massive hands. Hashtag RTDC gets into how to deal with sad news, the Triple C, mythical realms, and how to get a girl to like you. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggleruk.com. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm right here with Sam Perry. Pezza.
Hello.
Don't know why I said it like that. How are you, mate?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
You're getting there. I'm going to go right into the first question. Got a little first question for you. It comes from James Cosham, or Cosham, depending on how you want to say it.
Let us know.
CJC, g'day lads. A tweet about Stuart Broad being dropped because his dad was watching reminded me of a harrowing tale from a little while ago. A workmate of mine found himself selected in the Navy squad in the 2020 tournament against the Air Force and Army that was being played at Lord's, where he expected he would open the batting. Being a bit of a slow period at work, our boss put on a bus to go support our brother in arms. A few days later, I found myself being collected from my house and handed a lukewarm tinny at 8 a.m. on a Thursday for the 3-hour drive to Lord's with a dozen or so others who were keen to chin off an actual day's work. Wandering into the grounds just in time for the first ball, we saw the Army team at the crease with the Navy team taking the field, albeit without our mate, who was sat with the drinks on the boundary. After a flurry of bemused texts, we were told that he would play the next fixture against the Air Force. He, of course, didn't. The Navy got spanked in both games, and we were parked in the Lord's Head Tavern watching the FIFA World Cup by mid-afternoon. My question is this: on a scale of disappointing your dad, your long-suffering girlfriend, or a new love interest, where does not even being selected in front of a minibus full of your workmates place? Cheers, James. There's the reason I put this first, because obviously you've experienced this exact scenario. How was playing for the Navy?
Yeah, that's right. I guess first things first, Stuart Broad should have been selected, and we're going to cover that a little bit later. I got two things to say about this, and obviously it's going to be a wide-ranging conversation, but in terms of the scales of disappointment, like, I know I kind of can wander off with some of these questions into irrelevant tangents, but...
it's almost like none of this matters.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. But look, like, you're on a... Everybody knows who's listening to this podcast, you're on a hiding to nothing, ever trying to support a friend who's playing cricket, like, on the day, especially if they're a batter. I genuinely can't recall the number of times I have... like, had mates say, oh, I'll come watch you play. And you sort of go, oh, you know, you're just thinking, I'm going to be out when you come.
Yeah.
I'm going to be out, or I'm going to disappoint you.
Yeah.
You know, then you're at a low mental and emotional ebb, and then they're trying to be nice to you, and they're like, oh, you're out. It's not like going to watch someone play footy or something like that.
Yeah. It's all action. Yeah. Don't you get, like, to interject there, like, when someone says, I come watch you play cricket, I want them to know how grim most of cricket is.
Yes.
Heaps of it's nothing. Nothing's happening.
That's right.
Most of it is nothing happening.
And then in terms of the scales of disappointment with the dad stuff, doesn't even come close. I mean, like, I'm listening to, is it James? James's story?
Yeah, James, yeah.
They start day drinking on a minibus with 11 colleagues at like 8 a.m. on a weekday. Mm. They keep drinking at Lord's. Then they watch the FIFA World Cup, must state the organisation's name.
Yes.
Not a bad day. And also, like, if your mate had played, and this is the truth of going to watch your friends play cricket, you would have probably concentrated for, like, two balls of his innings.
100%.
Two balls, and then resume the exact same conversations you would have had without him there. Mm-hmm. So disappointing your dad is about, like, 13 standard deviations worse than any other group he mentions there.
Yeah.
There's just one other thing I want to say as a tangent, unless you've got something direct about that.
No.
I've noted this recent trends of iconic grounds opening its doors to amateur cricket.
Like, you don't sound for it.
The SCG does it all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, when I was living in London for a brief period, it occurred to me, like, Lords and the Oval do it too. I don't like it. I don't like it in any way. Like, it's bad enough enduring shit cricket, like, even if it's your own. But watching clubbies play on iconic grounds where absolute kings are meant to walk, you know, like, think about Lords and the Oval, Viv, Richards, Warne, Gower, both of them. Mm-hmm. It's distressing. Like, in 2018, I had a mate, an Aussie mate, invite me to play as a ringer for a corporate game at the Oval.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's not bad. But yeah. It's the fucking Oval. This is where, like, you know, Trump is jumping out to drive yeah. shot was captured, you know, yeah. where Bradman was bowled for naught in his last game, yeah. thus haunting number purists for life, you know, mm. where the Windies made England grovel in 76, Peterson hits 158, in the 05 Ashes. Yeah. Now, come and play corporate six-a-side here, KPMG versus Bain & Co., where there'll be two games going on at the same time, one on each half of the field.
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking distressing. Yeah. It's wrong. It's a disgusting way to treat grounds and uphold the stiff brand of elitism.
It's not right.
That may well kill cricket in England, but also helps distinguish it from other sports. It's just yuck.
You don't hold any strong views, though.
It's not a strong view, yeah.
Well, I would say about the Oval specifically, because, like, famously, there's like the square goes from like from point to square leg, mm-hmm. the entire boundary. So I've seen games like those corporate games played at the Oval, and like the wickets they use are like right on one side of the boundary.
Yeah.
And that doesn't fit into, like, in the same way that 99.94 just doesn't sit right for the cleanliness of 100. Watching a fucking game of cricket where, like, the batsman could back away to leg side and be over the boundary just makes me cringe in all sorts of different ways.
Just undignified, you
it's
know?
It's undignified.
Like, it's like, oh, here's the, hey, Mum, I'm getting to play at the Oval. Oh, that's amazing. Then Mum comes along and it's literally Milo fucking cricket.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's two games going on. You're probably, like, using yellow stumps. Yeah. You actually, like, it's undignified for the ground and it's undignified for you as a human and everyone associated with cricket. The Oval and Lords needs to stop letting bad players play at the ground.
So Stuart Broad wasn't picked.
Broad wasn't picked. It's an aggressive start to the show.
Why didn't they pick him?
Tell
me things you don't know. Why didn't they pick him?
I don't know. I mean, you'd mentioned this off air. You're sort of combing around the zeitgeist of English cricket, and, you know, far be it from two Aussie guys to, you know, be commenting
Let's
on English cricket.
Let's tell them what
or whatever,
cricket's
like. But, like, you've combed around the zeitgeist and you've found that many people are saying, well, actually, this team was selected with the Gabba 2021 in mind.
Yeah, and, and how could it not be?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We just want to see Wood and Archer together, a bit of fire and brimstone or whatever. It's really difficult when you're from a country for whom the omitted player actually dominates your country.
Mm.
Stuart Broad has dominated Australia in England for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard not to think that he's like excruciatingly difficult to play cutters.
Last year he looked hard to play.
Really hard. And then, you know, Tino Best made a really good point on Twitter, you know, admittedly in the first innings about Jofra. I was like, well, Jofra's bowling the same pace as Stuart Broad. Yeah. Why don't you just have Broad in his place?
Incredible
It's essentially
view.
What Tino said.
Incredible view.
Yeah.
And Jofra replied, mid-test match, it should be said on Twitter.
And that was good. I liked that he did that. And I liked the way Jofra did it because then he was nasty and scary in the second innings, making the batsman flinch, anyway, even though West Indies won. But, yeah.
I will say, like, watching, because Wood bowled the ball, it was like 153 k's an hour. It was like 91, 92, 93 miles an hour, whatever that equates to. And so that's going to be exciting, having Jofra and Wood play in Australia, definitely. But, like, no one, they're not fucking picking a team. Like, they've got a squad together which is going to try and compete in Australia in a year's time. Like, that's fine. But they're not fucking picking a team to, like, oh, can the bowlers bowl together 18 months away? Win the fucking game in Southampton. Mm. Like, this is, like, and also
speed doesn't win in England.
Doesn't win, exactly. Like, look how,
so
like,
Sean
Tate. Like, Hazel, yeah, Sean Tate,
Brett Lee.
They were pretty quick.
They just get pumped.
Like, wasn't Hazelwood saying last year, like, it took him a while to learn? Because everyone was thinking when he first went there that, like, he was just going to carve up. But then, if his first, like, two series in England, he, like, struggled a little bit.
I don't know.
And, like, it's, like, seemed like we picked Siddle.
Yeah.
Like,
English cricket is Siddle.
Speaking of skilled bowlers, Anderson, fuck, Anderson's good.
Yeah, I love it.
It would have been pretty hard for his son to retain
curl
the Ashes, I reckon,
unfurl.
if Anderson was playing, to be fair. What was more important for the Ashes, Smith or Anderson's Achilles?
Yeah. You mentioned this last week. but to be fair, you ask me that every time I turn up at the door before we start
morning
talking.
Morning, Pez. Now, mate, you got to let me know. You got to let me know. This West Indies side, it's quite interesting because, like, they obviously won that series in the West Indies a year ago, just before the Ashes last year. And, like, the West Indies, their batting is, like, Shea Hope bats 3-4 and the average is 27 or something. Like, their batting isn't very strong. But, like, the matchup works. Like, you look on paper, and England aren't, like, the number one team in the world that, you know, I mean, Australia are. But, like, but maybe the matchup of, like, maybe their bowlers just fancied a little bit. Maybe Shannon Gabriel was thinking, like, oh, I'll just bowl the stumps here and just roll these guys. Yeah, maybe it's like a matchup. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know, man.
How's Jason Holder the best player in the world?
I love Holder.
He's good, isn't
Wendy's,
he?
I mean, there's a lot of people who know a lot more than us about the state of West Indian cricket.
Yeah.
The last thing people need, like, is a verbal think piece, like pontification from us who know nothing.
That's not our role here.
Yeah, you know, from uninformed white Aussies, yeah. but like, fuck, we need the Windies to be good at Test cricket. Like, think about it. Yeah, I know everybody agrees with this.
Yeah.
Like, and here's a smug, oversimplified grade cricketing approach here to it. Go. Like, why don't India, England, and Australia just pool all of their riches
yeah.
and just give the West Indians tens of millions of dollars?
Yeah.
Stimulate cricket Fear. There, stimulate it for everybody. It's like Freud, you know, with the Oedipus complex, you know, mm-hmm. the psychoanalytic theory whereby, you know, the desire for sexual involvement with a parent of the opposite sex mm-hmm. is matched by a concomitant sense of rivalry with a parent of the same sex. I think somewhere deep within us, possibly a result of the vision of like holding Garner, Marshall, Richards in the 70s and 80s, like we want the West Indies to be beating us.
Yeah.
It's best. It's good for the game. It yeah. grows the game. Like yeah. we're desperate for that type of cuckoldry.
Yeah. We're desperate for that type of cuckold.
Just invest. Yeah. Just put the money together, invest, and you'll get the return.
Like it does look scary, like those like the 70s, 80s Windies team.
Because it was.
Yeah. Even like early 90s team. Yeah. Like that looked didn't look fun. Man. No fun in that. But cricket generally just needs like...
It's the quickest route to save Test cricket. It's just like, just give up some of your money, like invest it, like, you know, in equities in West Indian cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And then just everybody derives the return as the game grows.
I like the idea of the game being more worldly by teams being, like all teams being better. Like, because like 90s Pakistan, amazing as well.
Yeah.
Obviously can't play there anymore. Now like that away series is just like, you know, UAE. It's like no one's there. It's all a bit grim. It's been social distancing crowd for years, etc. But... Like, Windies, everyone in the world wants the West Indies to win this series, don't they? Really, apart from England.
Yeah.
Because yeah. it's just fun.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I don't have much more to add other than, like, West Indies being amazing is just great for cricket. And we've seen it through the 70s, 80s, early 90s as well. Everybody agrees. We don't know what we cannot bring a lot of those complexities to this show. We can bring people on who might be able to describe it one day. But it was great to see the Windies beat England.
Well, I was talking about sort of England, West Indies batting issues. England have a remarkable lack of depth. They've got like eight amazing one player. They've got like eight like Wokes, Stokes, like just guys who can like do a bit. But like the bowling is very strong. The bowling group is very, very strong, you would say. Wonderful depth. But the batting is, it ain't it.
Yeah.
It ain't
but,
it.
But, you know, Ollie Pope looks good.
He does look good.
Failed in both innings, but he looks good. He looks compact.
Yeah.
But a nice little flourish.
He's Ian Bell for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I was telling you before, I discovered that he went to Cranley, which is a very posh school in Surrey.
Nice.
And I've played at that school ground.
Oh, okay. Association.
So now it's about me now.
Yeah.
And that wicket is, it's one of the best places I've ever played cricket. Incredible. Right. Like real old money. So what I'm saying is Ollie Pope is old money. It's neat. It's compressed. Don't you think?
You're objectifying him by referring to him as it now.
It's good. Ollie Pope, it's good.
Yeah, it looks good.
It looks good to me. Like the elbow, it's a good elbow.
Yeah.
It's tight.
Yeah.
Neat.
The bat and pad are tight together. The the shoulders in close to the chin. Mm-hmm. It's a technically correct approach to cricket. Mm. Nice little.
It looks good when he gets out as well.
Yeah,
like when he nicks off. Yeah, that's a good ball.
Yeah, like as opposed to so he's scored the least amount of runs of the top order.
Yeah,
he still looks most assured of his place 100%. When Joe Root comes back
and
in.
Rightfully so,
and it looks as though Joe Denley will make way. Now, to be fair, I think it's understood that Denley would have already made way had Joe Root been available. Like he was first, it was last cab, I suppose, off the rank.
He was the last cab.
The last cab.
Yeah.
And but he's kind of confirmed many people's suspicions in this game as well, which is just like he just cannot seem to break the shackles past 20 or 30.
Yeah, see, he's another guy. He's like the James Vince, just good for 30. I like Denley as a five, not
Denley
a three.
Denley looks like Test cricket to me, though. He looks Test cricket.
He looks
cricket.
Test cricket. Also, his bicep was looking good.
His biceps look good. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
And he's...
You got my text?
Yeah. He puts zinc on the lower lip.
He looks Test cricket
Yeah,
to
and
me.
His face looks like grizzled.
Good face.
Grizzled for Test. And he's got the Hans Kmes kind of fielding limbs. He's got his limbsy.
Mm-hmm.
For Test cricket. So everything about it screams Test cricket. Yeah. The cap looks good on his head.
Mm-hmm.
He's played Sydney grade cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And yet just cannot break the shackles past 30.
Mm.
It's a shame.
It is a shame. I don't like him as a three, though. I like him as a five. But okay. Isn't he up in the batting?
He's batted everywhere. But I think he's top order player.
No one wants to bat three for England because Joe Root doesn't want to do it.
Well, no one wants to bat three around the world,
Why
really.
Doesn't anyone want to bat three? That's where the best player plays.
More runs at four.
I mean, it does make sense.
Yeah.
If I had to choose, I wouldn't be that three.
Yeah.
But why doesn't these professional athletes want to do it?
Yeah.
Who do you like? Do you like Zach Crawley?
Well,
why is he not last cap? Because he got the most runs in this game.
Zach Crawley looked like ungainly to me.
He's private school to me.
He's private school, but his technique looked ungainly. Yeah. And like I say this against the fact that he top scored for England in the second innings. He essentially gave them a chance. Yeah, and tall batsmen have to work hard.
Doesn't look right.
To earn respect. Mm. It doesn't happen very often. Mm. Just the movements again, seem uncoordinated, ungainly, and this is all we're talking in the concept of things seeming a certain way, being perceived a certain way, not true.
No,
just how it looks.
Ollie Pope, perfect height.
Perfect height. You know, you need to be short, compact. Mm. Everything needs to be in sync.
Yeah, there's no Crawley. There's no enormous stride. It's just a press.
Yeah.
It's just a hint.
It's just an Aussie view of who would intimidate us or who we'd respect based purely on physicality.
But that's the whole thing about the broad non-selection. Just like we've got the fastest guys, we'll pick the fastest guys. They're going back to the ways of Australiana.
Mm.
I don't know if they are, but Broad will play the next test match, won't he? So the next two tests are both in Manchester. They're 4 days apart, which is weird. I'm sure they'll prepare 2 wickets, surely. Although it would be fun if they started the test on a 9-day wicket.
That would be good. That would be good. I don't know.
Two spinners. Shannon Gabriel hits the stumps a lot. He hits like the six. There's like a stat going around. It's just going around.
Yeah, okay. Where's it going around?
I'm not really sure.
Tinder.
Could try that for an opening line. He's hit the stumps more than anyone else. But it is remarkable. Like, test match players don't miss the ball very often. Mm-hmm. Like, they just miss it. Actually, Josh Butler misses the ball a lot. He gets bowled a lot. Mm. That looks like the way he can get out.
Mm. I love you've attempted to start positive conversation about West Indian cricket and
they go hand in hand.
We're going back to Josh Butler and English players struggling.
Well, Josh is my aesthetically favourite player.
Oh, yeah.
But I had a look this morning. He averages 31.
Yeah.
He's better than 31. He should be averaging 40 in Test cricket. That's seven. He didn't keep that well.
Well, this is the crossover with Australian cricket because he's fast becoming, if not already, the great project player of English cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Watson thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 31, that's the same average as Tim Payne, who's now lauded these days, and Ian Healy averaged around that as well with the bat.
Yeah.
But it's like, but Josh, your upside is so high.
Yeah.
You're now failing by doing pretty much what all good keepers do.
Yeah.
So
I suppose in the history of the game for wicketkeeper, if your number seven is averaging 30, you're a very good side.
Yeah.
I just feel like he could average 40 in Test cricket, couldn't he?
I suppose, but then he's dropped that one down leg side, fourth innings. His glove work's no good. He's got Ben Foulkes behind him, who is the neatest of neat.
Well,
keepers.
I saw a photo of Ben Foulkes in a lead up to this test, like a promo photo, and he's sponsored by Grey Nicks.
Nice.
And his Grey Nicks have black gloves at the moment, and it was the worst fucking thing I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
It looked like black shoes, white socks, that kind of vibe.
I thought he was going to go down the path of like. Foulkes is kind of Payne-esque in the neatness. Like, he understands the symmetry.
Probably
the
best looking cricketer going around.
But the symmetry of the wicketkeeper as well. Yeah, it's cool going around. You mean sure I acknowledge that?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that the black gloves were kind of offering a sleek vibe and everything about it. Right. But how was Ben Foulkes allowed himself to do that?
I don't know.
That's like Tim Payne in short sleeves in that promo shot.
Exactly.
What's
what
going
I
on?
I don't know. I didn't like it.
Look into it. That's a conspiracy.
Obviously, no crowds. Yeah. At the game. You know, like in other sports, they're doing the crowd noise, football especially. Do you like the crowd noise, the fabricated crowd noise?
To be honest, like, I like the novelty of no artificial sounds.
Same.
Like, I love the lonely aesthetic.
Yes.
I like the ball echoing off the bat. I like how there's a $1 billion sport like cricket where you can hear birds squawking.
Mm-hmm.
I like the confirmation that, like, 99% of the things that players yell are just meaningless. Inanities shouted for no one but themselves.
Yep.
Probably just to keep themselves alert, that kind of stuff. Like, it reminded me of sitting at the SCG a few years ago. I think there was a Shield match on. I think we were recording a podcast at Fox that afternoon, and I was trying to write an article. So I went to the Shield game. You said I was playing Victoria. Blues are bowling.
Mm-hmm.
About 65 overs in, like, Victoria's maybe four down. Just a really, like, boring part, like, you know, part of the game.
Yeah. Most of the game.
Yeah, that's right. Quick save ran. And for about 15 minutes, Steve O'Keefe, sock, he's at, like, mid-on, just roaring between balls like a child. And you could hear it all. Like, it sounded like he had, like, attention deficit disorder.
Right.
But no one's at the ground. You can hear everything. And like Doug Bowling just bowling, and sock just keeps yelling, like, good bowl, Doug. Just emphasizing bowl, not ball.
Right.
And he's just amusing himself by saying good bowl to himself
and
just clap. No one else is saying anything. This is like this is before Australia dropped everyone. So Steve Smith was playing, all the guys were playing. Handsome scored 100 that game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Bollinger wasn't bowling, Steve Smith is just yelling at Bollinger about his girlfriend in the crowd
Okay.
for about 5 minutes. And I was just like, that's kind of That's real cricket.
That's real.
That's cricket. How cricket works. Yeah. And so to have like no artificial noise just hopefully elevates that a little bit.
You know when you're, you know, it's rounds about the back end of the season, there's maybe like four or five games left, you're in no finals chance, so you start sledging your teammates just because you are bored and lonely.
Mm.
And like that's the reality of cricket.
That's real cricket.
That's real cricket.
And I hope that the like that no artificial crowd noise can kind of pick that up, but we don't have that option, do they? Because they're still just putting a little hum over the top of it.
A little bit of a hum.
Yeah, we're not fooled.
One thing we should speak about is Jason Holder, who took six from the first innings. And he is the number one all-rounder in the world. I saw a stat that he is averaging, in the last 2 years, he's averaging less than Jimmy Anderson with the ball, and he's averaging more than Joe Root with the bat.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
But I feel like, because there's such a fucking monopoly with cricket, where if you don't play for one of the three big teams, being India, England, Australia, there's like all this other amazing world-class cricket happening in other series that like you don't pay attention to unless they play the other big teams. So it's like...
I mean, then you always think like, well, a bit of an asterisk there for Holder because he's just spending his time playing against Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. I'm sure the stats don't bear it out in any way. Mm. But because you don't see these guys very often because the big three are pooling all their matches and money together. Like when Holder comes across like, well, he's actually averages less than Jimmy Anderson. Like, yeah, but come on. And then he goes and takes 6 for 42 against a big three.
He's averaging 13 the last 2 years.
And I love it because it's not like it's 160 k's. It's not like it's hooping a mile or anything. Like he doesn't have a superpower.
Yeah.
But the accuracy, he does have a superpower. But he does.
He's fucking massive.
He's massive.
He's fuck off big.
Yeah.
That's how big he is.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. You know when the opposition has like a really tall bowler. I don't know how tall he is. He's almost a 7 footer.
You're an adolescent, and every side, like the other side, has a player with a beard, and you're like, he's going to be quick. Yeah.
Well, he's 23, and this is the other 10.
That's a good point.
And thank you. And you, like, how do you get on the front dog to Holder?
Yeah,
like that's coming from such a height that there is no sight screen big enough. There's no front dog.
Yeah,
but like I saw a photo with him next to Jofra Archer. Jofra, I'm not sure how tall Jofra is, but he's 6'3", 6'4", I'm guessing. And he looks like a child next to Jason Holder.
Yeah.
And he's the captain. And he just, in terms of like, you want someone to get around you. I mean, Jason Holder's like wrapping his arms around four or five of you in a huddle.
Well, you know, you'd have to start saying that Holder may be looking to usurp Faf as world cricket's alpha. If you think about what is being put up in, like what, just in terms of the sheer number of categories that is satisfying.
Yeah.
He's destroying people on the field.
Yeah.
And he's bigger than people off the field. Yeah. Like, he's an enormous human.
Yeah.
So he has that presence.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, and we're going to get onto this, a supremely lovely person.
Yeah.
Who can dominate.
Mm. What's his secret?
What's the secret?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about 10 out of 10 guys. You know what I mean?
No, no,
I
need
you
to be 8. We talked about this last week.
Yeah.
Is he a bad schooner? Is he a bad pint?
He can't be. I don't think he is. He's not only a world like class cricketer. He's also a statesman, as well. What's the weakness, Jason?
Yeah.
What is it? What are we looking at? Yeah,
something. We know it's something. I don't know.
Love him.
But anyway, yeah,
is he got out? Has he got Faf in his sights?
Well, Faf retired, isn't he? From tests. So Jason's number one all rounder, number one rig, nice guy,
number one bloke.
Number one bloke, fucking hell.
Okay. If anyone knows Jason Holder, try and get him on
Someone
show.
Must know. Yeah. Someone must have a story.
If anyone knows him.
Circuit story.
Anything.
On the rums or something one night. I don't know.
Well, there is those pictures of him with Jofra Archer where Jofra was daggering that night.
Yeah. That was a festival.
Yeah, when he was wearing England cricket shorts. Mm. So.
One thing we should speak about, Pez, before we were speaking to Jason Gillespie and Monty Panesar.
Yes.
Which I said at the top, didn't I? Yeah. There was obviously a really moving piece at the beginning of the coverage that Sky put together with Michael Holding, especially, who spoke really eloquently about the Black Lives Matter movement. You would have seen this, obviously, Pez, and obviously praised 99.99% around the world, rightfully so.
Of course, yeah.
It's my instinct was that it was obviously really well produced. And I was thinking about like what's going to happen when Australian summer starts? And like, is that a thing that even Australian audiences are ready for? Which might not even be the point, but I was just thinking like, how's that?
Well, I think, first things first to praise that, production.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was superb, you know, and it was really powerful.
Yeah.
It was both Holding and Ebony Rainford Brent.
Right.
And they were saying, you know, that if you missed it, you know, institutionalized racism must be eradicated for the good of humanity.
Yeah.
Pretty fair point.
Pretty
fair. You'd imagine, you know, and then Holding spoke incredibly powerfully afterwards as well. You know, over the next 2 days, a Sky cricket. This is Sky.
Yeah.
You know, asked every West Indian player about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't flinch. Like it was unflinching. It was they went hard at it. And it's interesting because I think like there's obviously dickhead comments underneath or whatever. You're always going to have people who do that. You know, I think some people find the idea of like institutionalized racism difficult to see, like because it turns up quietly or unspoken. It's an abstract idea for some people. You know, they think, oh, if I can't see it, then it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But it's what happens next that matters. So, you know, do you hear those who claim to experience it and listen to them, or do you maintain, no, I don't see it, so they must be wrong? And then you have Holding, you know, like one of the most admired cricketers in the world, say if you don't educate people, they'll keep growing up in that sort of society and you will not get meaningful change. Mm. You know, I listen to Holding.
Yeah.
Listen to him.
Yeah.
He's a statesman. In terms of Australia, well, I think, you were saying, you know, that only like last year there was someone holding up a banner at Perth.
Two guys went to Optus Stadium in Perth there and held up a sign that says it's okay to be white. And CA's response to that gave them a first and final warning.
Yeah.
Then they could have walked into the ground the next day.
Yeah.
No punishment.
Yeah.
Incredible. Like that, like to me, like, well, who knows what the audience thinks, but like to me, Australia is so far behind in conversations about race and recognition of, especially the Indigenous society in Australia, and the lack of integration of the two communities, that I just wonder like how receptive, you know, like I would love for Fox and Channel 7, the host broadcast in Australia, to be hosting a similar piece. Now, I know it's like 3 months down the line, so you just hope that it's still part of the conversation, you know? But, I just...
Well, it will be. I mean, history doesn't go in a straight line. There's nothing that's going to happen in 3 months that's not going to make it part of the conversation, you know? It'll be interesting to see how they... What they do. I was talking to a mate the other day and he noted the ease with which the race issue has been dropped from public discourse in Australia in the last few weeks. You know, we'll dissect the lecherous conduct of a high court judge from every angle, but, you know, the uncomfortable and complex analysis of race, we'll park that for a bit. But, like, you know, I would be very surprised if the same sort of appetite existed within the networks here in Australia when cricket starts off here. But, like, I'd love to be completely wrong. And I reckon a ton of people would welcome a similarly strong stand.
I love that idea that that Australia aren't ready for the conversation. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're ready, you know.
Well, what Sky did was leadership.
It's like what Michael Holding is saying, is you have to educate. And we saw, like, you know, 2 days afterwards, we see any football fans out there, Wolf Sahar get a direct message, which I'm not going to repeat, but it's just absolutely heinous from a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, well.
The police arrested him.
Yeah.
Horrendous. So, like, educating people. Anyway, Pez, wonderful show. We've got sort of that. Monty Panesar, Jason Gillespie, hashtag ICDSA. It's all to come. And the West Indies up 1-0.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I guess me just whispering in their ear saying, get rarer.
But realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I proudly call it the Joel Wilson Institute.
Look good, play good, feel good.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the man you have all been waiting for. A lot of requests for this guy over a long period of time, and finally, he has agreed to come on to the show. Now, I'm not sure if our guest is aware of this, but we always commence the introduction of a guest by going through their numbers, because the iron law of cricket, whatever level you played, the iron law of cricket is that your numbers define you, not your personality, not anything, just the numbers next to your name. My cricket, play cricket, whatever it is. So here are some numbers I want to throw at the people who listen to this show, and I'll say throw aggressively, but 50 tests, 167 wickets, 12 fifers at that level, 2 10-fers, a best of 6 for 37. I've read 709 first-class wickets, but elsewhere I've read 710 first-class wickets at 31, 39, 5 for 6, 10 for a best of 7 for 60. They are some outstanding numbers, whichever way you look at it in the cricketing game. He was part of two Ashes-winning England sides. He was Wisden Cricketer of the Year in 2007. There are a lot of people very, very happy that we're chatting. I'm talking about Monty Panesar. Monty, welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on The Great Cricketer, and finally, you tracked me down, and I couldn't say no. You cornered me, and I thought, right, I better do this.
Not physically.
No.
Monty, just we always start the same way, and there's no better person to ask this question to, I believe. So you've played at Lords. You've also played at Raby Oval in Campbelltown.
Yeah.
Can you compare and contrast the two grounds, and more broadly, what is your relationship as a Wisden Cricketer of the Year, Test cricketer? What's your relationship with Sydney grade cricket?
I've played there quite a few times. I played at Randwick Petersham, and then I played at West and also Campbelltown. So, I think I've got a strong relationship with great cricket. At the age of 38, probably, you know, I think my great cricket years are done now, possibly. I don't know. If it's up to you guys, really. Would you like to me come back for final year? The one. Come back for a testimonial year. Yeah,
I reckon we're looking like maybe captaining threes or something like that. If you want to like lead some young guys, you know, into the future generations, Monty. Take them under the wing.
Well, gosh, I'm flying other side of the country, and you're giving me third grade cricket. Gosh, you guys are giving me a fair opportunity here.
Just on that note, Monty, we always sort of try and do like a little bit of background on guys that we're interviewing. That's probably what you should do. And somebody told us that you both lived and worked with Greg Matthews. Now, we love like eccentric spinners on the podcast. We love what they're all about. We'll talk about eccentric spinners later. But can you just give an insight into both of those things, living and working with Greg Matthews as Monty Panesar?
Yeah, I think Greg Matthews... I think he's a very challenging person. He's very direct, and he will challenge you a question where he'll make you think. And I instantly liked the way he would challenge me when I met him at Sydney during the fifth test match. And, you know, he just asked me the question of like, just a very simple question. He goes, do you own it? Right. And I said, what do you mean? Do you own it? Like, what do you mean? Own what? Like own a car, own a house, like own what? You could just own it, man. You just got to own it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Own it. Like, what is it? Where are we? Like, I don't know what we're talking about. But that was it. And that's what it is, because he's speaking something that he sees in you. He's like, he goes, you know what? Own it. Own your presence at the crease. You know, but without delivering the ball, like Shane Warne, you know, he used to own it. You know, Shane Warne and Greg Matthews are really good mates. And you can see how Shane Warne, you know, kind of like, he kind of wanted to be like Greg Matthews when Greg Matthews was massive in the mid-80s and the 90s. And then obviously Shane Warne took over, he kind of emulated him, and then he just took it to the next level, you know, the Hollywood sort of cricketer, right? But it was owning it. Owning it means, it's like Andrew Strauss put it the best way. He goes, I'll look up the crease, and I look at Shane Warne's eyes, and I feel like he's looking into my eyes, and he exactly knows how he's going to get me out, and I know he's going to get me out as well. Now, that's what Greg Matthew meant by owning it. Like, you look at the top of your mark, you look at the batsman, and I'm looking at you to tell you, I'm going to get you out this way, and you can't do anything about this because I'm going to get you out. And I think that's how my relationship started with Greg Matthews. He goes, you know, just got to own it, man. You got to own that batsman. He doesn't know what you're going to bowl, but he sure well knows that you're going to get him out.
Really like that sort of comparison. Like, because a lot of the things we do here, Monty, it's like an introspection into the Australian male in particular. And like, because great cricket just brings together all these like interesting people from all different walks of life, for, you know, better and for worse. Really, I mean, what sort of drew you to come out to play club cricket in Australia, and then can you compare it to sort of meeting people at club cricket in the UK or representative cricket in the UK, you know, the Australian man and the English man? Like, are they...
The dressing rooms, the tubs, dressing rooms, the language.
Yeah, everything, yeah, circuits. Like, how is it all different?
I think the difference is that, the difference is there's a lot more, you've got to be a lot more hands-on when it comes to grade cricket.
Love it.
You know, put the covers away, for example, get the tees and everything else that kind of ready. Well, there's quite a bit done for us, but then there's a lot of similarities as well, because similarities are that it's a very much a community club base, a club cricket culture similar to, you know, sort of England. But England, I would say, it's a more of a community. It's like the whole village will come and, you know, support the team, while certain suburbs, it's just like the local fans that come in and and it's not like that whole area. And I think that's the kind of feel you get in England. It's actually part of a Sunday afternoon for the whole town or the village to actually come and just pop by and just see how the local team is doing. Well, when we watch grade cricket, it's probably a bit more competitive. You know, first grade, I'll say second and 11th standard. It's very competitive. The guys are like, you know, abuse you, say stuff to you, and you get some of the sort of first-class cricketers from New South Wales playing in as well. And it becomes, it's a lot more competitive. You've got to definitely got to take some of the abuse as well as, you know, be competitive.
I think that's a pretty thorough answer and tallies with what most people say well. Like, I want to pick up, Monty, like we're talking about Mo before and yourself and Shane Warne. Like, it occurs to us, we're really fascinated about it, that, like, spinners are often kind of thought of in cricket as, you know, what some people would say is rare units. You know, they have a sort of a tendency to be really eccentric in the way that they think. Do you think that that's a kind of, like, evolutionary result of just the role of being a spinner, where you just can just get disposed into the car park at any time, but also, you know, take a huge bag, and it's a just complete roller coaster at all times? And how, like, you know, what's your relationship to that kind of eccentricity?
Yeah, I think spinners, like, if you're a match-winning spinner, if you're going to win the game, first inning, second inning, it's the celebrations, it's how, you know, it's how you, like, flight the ball in the air, and then it just turns off the pitch, and you bamboozled the batsman, or, you know, the batsman wants to hit you for a six, one ball hits you for a six, next minute, you flight the ball, and they've missed it off the pitch, and you've stumped him, and he's halfway down the wicket on a flat pitch, and he looks like, you know, it feels you know, just quite embarrassed, like, oh my gosh, I'm out, and proper, you know, and that's what spinners can do. They can actually really humiliate the batsman, especially if you can, you know, come down the wicket. And also, they're like the heart of the team. If they're like a real sort of extrovert characters, they're match winners, you know, you have the short leg, everyone around the bat, and everyone's loving the sort of, you know, the pressure of it. You always get the short leg, the slip, saying, go on, mate, he's going to toss the next one up, just hit it for a six, let's see if you can still middle the ball on a turning pitch. And just fun stuff like that. So you can see, like, a lot of players are interacting while the spinner's bowling. And that's why the spinners are like, you know, if you get a good match-winning spinner, they tend to, be the heart of the team, and they sort of gel in with everyone.
As much as, like, the spinners need to have this eccentricity, and it's all about attitude when delivering it in the crease and stuff, there's also a genetic element. And I just need to know, Monty, like, how big are these hands? Like, how big are we talking? Like, can you palm a basketball?
Yeah.
You know, is it Kawhi Leonard kind of stuff?
Mitts.
Like, yeah, mitts. Yeah.
Where are the mitts at?
How big are they? How big are the mitts?
Well, they're big enough to catch a few balls, and let's be honest, I can carry five or six balls in my hands, and they are. I have massive hands, and the problem is, like, why do I drop catches? You know, this is what I don't seem to understand. Like, what happened to me? Like, was my hand eye coordination of a different species, not a human being?
Like, when you've got the fingers wrapped around the ball, would that be like the equivalent of, like, you know, just a mortal man with a golf ball? Is that the equivalent?
Does it just feel small?
Does it feel small?
Yeah, I think. Look, I couldn't work it out. You know, and I hope you guys got the answers, but I don't know what exactly it is that, why do I drop catches? But I drop catches, and I take some blinders, and sometimes when they stick in the hand, the batsman's even surprised. And I normally say to the batsman, sorry, mate, you know, it's not your day today if I'm catching a cricket ball.
I just want to be really clear, Monty, like, the mitts chat, like, the hand chat was not leading towards drop catcher stuff. Like, we're just literally fascinated with blokes who have big hands and admire.
Well, I thought I'd just be honest with you guys and say, look, guys, I've got great big hands. I should be in the slips, should be taking some great catches like Punter, you know, Ricky Ponting. But instead, I'm at mid-on trying to stop the ball when it gets hit at me because I can't stop it. So I'm equivalent of Edward Scissorhands.
Ha 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 ha. Well, you were talking before, Monty, about the pressure and the theatre around, you know, a spinner coming on, man round the bat. I mean, you know, obviously Jack Leach did the job last year, one of the most famous innings from a left-hand tail ender. It was, what, 10 years before then? I think it was 2009, Cardiff. There was a certain left-handed tail ender as well holding out, staving off the Aussies as a ice cream van or a police wagon. One of the two goes past Monty's window. But I want to know what Ponting was saying around the bat at Cardiff 2009. What was Haddon saying? What were they saying? You know, a pair of gloves gets called out every two overs, you know, drink, you know. What was the energy like? What was being said out there on the field?
Yeah, look, Ponting wasn't saying anything, to be honest. He was probably thinking, well, there's no point me abusing this guy. He can't even bat, and we'll probably get him out anyway. But the interesting bit for me was, when we talk about owning it and we're going through it right now, I just never felt, Nathan Hurwitz's presence. Now, I just never felt him. I felt like he bowled off spin, but I just never felt that, you know, he never abused me, or he just wasn't aggressive in his thing, or never played any like tactical funny games, like, you know, just walk past me, say something in my ear or whatever. Like, and maybe that was one of the reasons why, you know, Hurwitz, who should have been, I thought, a lot better than, should have had a much more, you know, successful career, because I think he's got great talent, great shape on the ball. But I don't think he owned it, you know, that, you know, looking at the bats for nine and say, look, I'm going to get you out. Even if it's a full toss, even if it's a half volley, I'm going to get you out, right? I just never felt him as a person. I don't know why is that the case. I don't know. Certain cricketers you feel, you know, you're like, anything they do, you know, they just have a presence. While others who could be really good, and I thought he was a pretty good off spinner, I just never felt that he would get you out on turning wicket. I don't know why.
I love this frame of like owning it and feeling them. Like, can you give us some insight? Like, who have you felt the most that maybe people wouldn't expect? You know, like who owns it in a way that we wouldn't see, and then vice versa, who didn't you feel?
Ryan Sidebottom.
I thought, okay, so Simon Cattage.
Yeah.
Very unassuming. Someone like Hayden is very natural, you know, and Simon Cattage, you could felt he just owned it. He was very disciplined, very in there, but, you know, not as vocal, you know? You know, someone like Hayden, Gilchrist, you know, like Langer as well, you hit him on the head like three or four times, he's still there. He's like, you know, so determined. You know, he just got this, like, martial arts mentality about him. So, but while Simon Cattish is someone you don't really think of, but then when you play against him, you're like, yeah, he actually, yeah, you can feel that he's going to, he's going to tough it out. I'm going to tough this out.
Again, in the current England setup, obviously Don Best has got the job at the moment. He's got a bit of flair about him. He's got a certain je ne sais quoi. You know, is he giving you vibes? Are you feeling him?
Is he owning it?
Who's that?
Don Best.
Great answer.
I think there's part of his actions, he's owning it. And then there's other parts where I feel like he doesn't. You know, if he's not. I think he's a type of player, if he needs to score runs and he feels more confident with his bowling when he's scoring runs. Because he's a more of a batter than a bowler. So I feel that his confidence comes from scoring runs. And then he feels like I can own it with his action, his integrity at the crease, his attitude and all of that. But when he's not scoring the runs, I feel like he's like, you know, he probably thinks I'm a bit of a part-time off spinner, which is probably more than that. But, you know, it's not like a, you know, not like a Nathan Lyon, right? It's not like, you know what I mean?
Monty, we often like try and solicit some like background, like I said, or some anonymous questions. We got one from someone who you will know, but it is anonymous. But this is what he asked me to send on to you. Have you ever smoke bombed an Australian cricketer in Brighton, Sussex, after one beer, after this Australian cricketer travelled an hour on the train to catch up with you?
No. Who was it?
Zampa.
I never smoke bombed him.
I'm just a conduit here.
Adam's lying.
you just want to. No, I actually didn't smoke bomb him. I actually picked him up and we went to Sussex and he trained there and he was bowling beautiful. And he's like, he's You know, he you know what it is? He had his elbow like Shane Warne. Now Shane Warne bends the elbow.
Yeah.
When he's at the crease of delivery point. He had the same as that. And that's why his shape was similar to his, but probably he rushed through the crease a bit more. But yeah, he sounded pretty lily well, you know. One day, if I smoke bombed him, what does that mean, smoke bomb in Aussie terms? I rephrase it in English.
Yeah, good. That's fair enough. Yeah. I think smoke bomb means like, I'm gathering that he expected to have more than one beer with you. So you've sat down and have one beer, then you've probably said politely, I have to leave now, Adam. Mm. And he's interpreted that as a smoke bomb. Yeah. So you're like, you put your smoke bomb on the ground and then just left with the smoke in the air.
Yeah. Like a magician.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I didn't realize he wanted more beers. He should have asked me. I would have got some VB, a crate of VB. I would have said, come on then, let's crack a VB open, mate.
Does Zampa own it?
Yeah.
I think at times in one day, if he's done really, really well, yeah, he obviously does, you know. It's not like he doesn't, but you know, he's worked out a mold for him where he knows I'm good at white ball cricket. And he's done a brilliant job there.
Mm. But you've got a bit of a cult following going on online, you know, loving these home workouts. I've seen some leg press on the floor with the really couch, good. You know, a couple of tricep dips with the dining chairs. You know, you obviously do the Monty channel on Twitter as well. I mean, is the goal to get into broadcasting, or, you know, can we expect, you know, a 30-day summer shred package coming out on Instagram?
Well, we can expect both, you know, a shredded Monty Panesar, you know, doing fitness circuits, I'm you know, it. Maybe on Bondi Beach and got the whole Bondi Beach crew just following me like Hasselhoff, you know. and then, you know, media broadcasting is something I really want to, you know, move into because I feel like that's something that a lot of people have said that to me, because that's where you should go for, you know, media broadcasting, TV, entertainment, you know, that's the area you should go towards.
I just have another one that's come through from a fan. It's just more of a confirmed deny, Monty, but the allegation is that at one stage during a club cricket match, you were fielding at mid-off, and while the game was going on, you were on the phone talking into your Apple Watch. Is that a conspiracy? Is somebody pulling my leg there, or is that possibly true?
So what was I saying into my Apple Watch?
You were just on the phone talking into your Apple Watch while the game was being played at mid-off. You're at mid-off.
Okay, Apple, can you tell me what line to bowl on this flat pitch in Sydney Great Cricket, please? Do not bowl today. Wicket is too flat. Tell your captain that. Okay, Siri, thank you.
So that definitely happened then.
Siri goes, who is, tell your captain, if you do have an injury, please fake one right now. Thank you.
Still going.
So yeah, you're right. I did speak to my Apple Watch because I just couldn't work out what line of length bowl on this flat pitch. And actually, Siri told me, do you not have a bowl today?
Well, I'm not. I know you've answered this question before, but you know, I have to know for myself. You know, obviously one of the greatest appearances on Mastermind in recent memory. I just need to know what happened. You know, the bright lights, questions coming thick and fast. I mean, I just need to know what happened.
We
right,
freeze
you know?
On TV every week.
Well,
so.
Look. They asked me the question: what's the season when leaves fall off the trees? And I said, Oliver Twist.
Oliver Twist. Yeah, of course. First thing came to mind.
But it's autumn. It's actually autumn.
Yep. Easy mistake to make.
That's well, right. It's happened to all of us. It's happened to all of us, or does it only happen to Monty Panesar?
That's for the listeners out there to decide.
Well, that's something for the great cricketers to discuss. And, you know, on a Saturday, well, you know, on a flat track on a Saturday, you know, well, how would we answer that question?
Some days, you know, if it's a hot Oliver Twist day, I'm not bowling on a flatty. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Well, listen. There's one thing I tell you guys, if you don't know, if you're stuck at the crease and you don't know how to face, have your Apple Watch out, just ask Siri.
Love it.
And it'll give you the game plan while you're there.
I think that's the sound that probably should wrap it up. Monty Panesar, thanks so much for joining TGC. You've given us more time than we asked for, and you've been very generous with your answers as well. Wishing you all the best. Congratulations on, you know, a stellar test career and stuff as well. You never know, could be back as well, still going round. And hopefully we'd like to catch up with you again.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that too. And how is lockdown in Australia? Like, I hear that the gyms, everything is open, and you guys are one of the countries that got it right.
Well, except for Melbourne, where we are.
Yeah. Monty, let me tell you, I'm missing the gym big time, and I'm trying leg press couches. I'm buying dining room chairs just to get some dips in. Honestly, like, they've just closed the gyms again in Melbourne. We're all struggling. But, you know.
Okay, so I look forward to your leg press videos, and you can send them at Monty Panesar on Twitter. And also, any Sydney great cookers out there, please follow me at Monty Panesar, and also at Monty Channel, and we do fitness videos. And if anybody, you know, I would actually I would love people to actually send me their videos from Australia.
Immense
pleasure.
Okay, Monty, you shouldn't have said that, because you're going to get thousands now, and it's going to be led by Higos. He doesn't know that until now, but there's going to be a collaboration between Higos here and you doing fitness videos in lockdown. That's sorted out. Yep.
All right. Well, like they say, put the Barbie on the shrimp, mate.
Thanks so much, Monty.
Okay, thanks, mate. Thank you.
Well, given that the test matches are crammed in a very short period of time, you're going to get that opportunity. What about getting to 500 wickets? Is that a big carrot dangling in front of your eyes?
Not really. No, I'm not really bothered about those sort of milestones.
Why the fuck you lying? Why you always lying? Oh my God, stop fucking lying.
Okay, back for his second runaround on the grade. Cricketer is a legend of Australian cricket. He's also helped us out at a couple of live shows as well. And last time he was on this cast, you wouldn't have heard him in any way due to my son crying and an incredibly poor technical setup. So,
Crycast.
Yeah, I mean, he's been texting us every week, this man, just to say, listen, let me back on, let me get my...
redemption.
Yeah, let me get some redemption out there. And finally, we've opened the door. But with all that in mind, a big welcome to Jason Dizzy Gillespie. Dizzy, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks, mate.
How have you been managing COVID, isolation, quarantine? Where are you in the world? You know, how's it been going?
I've been based here in South Australia. We live about an hour or so out of Adelaide, down on the south coast, and it's a nice little town. So just been in ISO since coming back from Sussex, because we had a pre-season camp in Cape Town that got cut short when, obviously, with the pandemic, and, you know, if you remember back in March, things were changing really quickly. So ended up flying, had a round trip, went from Adelaide to Cape Town, had a few days in Cape Town, then flew to London, stayed in Hove for a couple of nights, and then it became clear that the season wasn't going to start. So I got on a flight out from England and been back here in South Australia after 14 days of isolation. And since sort of back into March, I've been down here and not doing too much, missing the cricket, to be honest.
Well, mate, I was curious to sort of pick up on how you like to spend your time, because, like, aside from, you know, getting into Twitter disagreements with Rodney Hogg about All Lives Matter, which we'll come to later, we've noticed that, like, cricketers kind of deal with it differently. Like, you know, Aaron Finch was concerningly starting to, you know, catch golf balls with one hand and stuff, and going a little bit, like, people probably go a bit stir crazy. Like, well, what does isolation look like for you? Like, how do you pass it? How does Jason Gillespie kind of pass the time when there's no, nothing obvious to do?
TikTok?
Yeah, no, I certainly haven't done TikTok, you know. I'm trying to avoid that. I wouldn't know the first thing to how to do it or anything. But look, I've spent a bit of time, man. Whenever the weather's good, I like to get outside and either go for a run or at least a walk. That gives you a bit of time. I've been just listening to, you know, catching up on radio, and, you know, I like listening to a bit of talkback radio, and, you know, with some of the sports stuff that's going on. Just binging TV shows and, you know, watching the odd movie, spending time with the kids and stuff. Pretty mundane things, really. day-to-day things. I shouldn't say mundane, spending time with my kids. but just normal day-to-day stuff. You know, I've been, we live near a golf course, so I've been every now and again, I go and hit a couple of balls because my son's just getting into golf a little bit. So, you know, try to play the odd round with him. But other than that, really just spending time with family and, you know, trying to keep out of everyone's way, really, because, you know, I think with this, with everything that's going on with the pandemic, you know, all the buzzwords that are out about social distancing and that, I'm trying to adhere to all that sort of stuff as much as I possibly can.
Obviously, fantastic to have the cricket back as well, just have something on it, you know, one in the morning. if nothing else, but yeah, we obviously saw the great packages from Sky. Dizzy, you know, put together with Michael Holding and Ebony yeah. Manford Brent about their experiences with racism in the UK. I mean, we were sort of talking earlier, Pez and I, about, you know, it'd be great to see, you know, Fox and Channel 7 here in Australia like show a similar sort of leadership, I suppose, in terms of raising awareness and educating the people. I mean, how do you reflect on what Sky put together with Michael and Ebony?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's quite moved, really, to watching, you know, and it's something that, let's face it, it's long overdue. It obviously has been an issue. A lot of people may, you know, a lot of people have different opinions on it, don't they? But, you know, and look, you referenced that tweet with Ronnie Hogg and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I think people by and large have been, you know, missing the point about, you know, what the message is out there. And, you know, we saw the events in the US, you know, with George Floyd and you know, that terrible incident. And that's really been the catalyst, hasn't it, for, you know, for me, I think, you know, good discussion. I think that's what Michael Holding was saying. He said, let's just get this discussion out and open and honest communication. And, you know, for me, that's the absolute key. And, you know, people are talking about it, people making stands, and, you know, for me, I think it's wonderful. And, you know, certainly what you said about, you know, maybe the various networks here in Australia, you know, hopefully, you know, that they can do something very similar, because, you know, look, let's face it, we've had and still continue to have our issues here in Australia. There's no doubt about that. We've seen with AFL football is one that's probably been given a lot of airtime, the spotlight. You know, it simply isn't good enough. It's as simple as that. And, you know, as a society, need to be so much better.
I think there's a lot of people who are really surprised and some people were delighted with the forcefulness of the leadership that Sky showed in sort of unflinchingly, as we call it at the top of the show, tackling an issue of race, speaking about it so clearly and openly, and you know, through a guy like Michael Holding, who's such an admired cricketer. Like, where would you say Australian cricket is on these kinds of issues? You know, what do you think the capacity is of Australian cricket to raise it with us, to raise these issues and to educate people with as much like openness and power as the way Sky and I suppose English cricket has as well?
Well, Cricket Australia have got the capacity to do it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think, you know, they've been looking to move things in the right direction. You know, an example would be, and things that I've noticed, you know, as an Indigenous person, is the embracing of the, I don't know if you guys have seen over the last couple of years, the Australian Indigenous team has had some trips away, and there was a great trip over to the UK. Sussex actually played against the Indigenous side, which was fantastic. But that was given a lot more airtime, you know, and, you know, which I think is really important. I think Cricket Australia, I think they put out something in the last few days, a Black Lives Matter tweet, I think, or an Instagram post. So, you know, there's capacity for it to be there. And I've got no doubt that Cricket Australia, that you know, they'll be talking about the ways that they can do that coming up, you know, this summer, ways they can acknowledge that the conversation needs to be had. Whether they do it to the level that Sky have done, you know, I know Cricket Australia probably have to get the various broadcasters on board, and I'd like to think that the broadcasters would be on board. Because look, let's face it, it is an issue. It's an important issue. And it's something that it is in Australia, you know, that can be done a lot better.
Mm. I remember quite recently, actually, I think it was Dan Christian wrote in his social media about when he was reflecting on his ODI debut, and when he was in the presser before his first game, he had like a full 20-minute press conference talking about, you know, how he'd grown up and grey cricket and state cricket and, you know, how he got to this place. And he had one question about his Indigenous heritage. And then the headline the next day was basically about his heritage and stuff. And he said in this post that he felt like the way that it was portrayed, that he was selected on the basis of being an Indigenous player, not because of through his, you know, professional sporting merit. And I was wondering, like, what if you ever, like, felt the same sort of pressure or scrutiny, Dizzy, when you were playing about, you know, your heritage or background or anything like that?
I never felt I was, well, certainly not from, you mentioned what Dan said about felt selected for that reason. I never felt that. I mean, it wasn't necessarily known that I had, like publicly, that I had an Indigenous heritage until well after, you know, into my career. Right. So, you know, there was no, I certainly never felt there was any thought that I was picked, you know, because of my Indigenous heritage. I'd like to think I was picked, you know, because I deserve my spot in the side. You know, look, we all know the issues that South Africa have had, and, you know, all transformation and things like that. But look, certainly, you know, I can't speak to Dan. You know, that's how he felt.
Sure.
You know, I think it was probably just look, as I said, I can't speak to Dan, but I think that what he was trying to say is that he'd spent all, you know, a lot of this press conference talking about a lot of things, but, you know, the focus was all purely on one small thing, yeah. Which, you know, can happen in the media. Like, you know, I know I've done interviews, you know, I remember I did an interview when I was coach at Yorkshire years ago, and I spoke to this journalist for an hour, and I think the last minute or two I spoke about me being a vegan and not, not liking, you know, not liking dairy farms and things like that, not agreeing with the process of dairy farms. And the headline in this person's article was all about that and how I was disrespecting sponsors and the like. So in a different way, I can kind of understand where Dan's coming from that perspective, I suppose.
Okay, and we'll probably headline our
podcast. Well, that will be the headline.
Yeah, about that. Vegan,
are you? That's interesting. Okay, yeah. Our main sponsor is Dairy Farmers as well.
Yeah, so. That's right. We have to delete this, actually. Speaking of what a lot of people are focusing on, Dizzy, there's you know, all sorts of theory, mainly from cricket nuffies, about how to make a ball move without saliva, at the use of saliva. Obviously, you're coaching at Sussex or coaching all around the world, and I'm sure you'd have your own theories about this as well. But the new one that we're hearing is that there's different types of sweat involved with different people. You might even have sweat-based selections. That's from Tim Hewitt on Twitter.
Right.
What's going to be your favorite way of making the ball move? I mean, is it back sweat? You know, do you subscribe to the back sweat theory in that that's the worst kind of sweat?
Well, I mean, I must admit, just before I got on to here with you guys now, I just went for a big long walk, and I can assure you, I've got a bit of back sweat right now. so I could certainly shine a cricket ball up well and truly right now. But look, where do you draw the line? I mean, gee, it's going to be interesting. Like, you know, there could be some, you know, players of, you know, sweat in different places. So that could come up for some interesting shining techniques on the field. But, you know, watching the England and West Indian seamers over the last few days, few nights, watching the test match, you know, it has been interesting to see them go. I mean, the main one is obviously the sweat off the brow. And, look, I don't know how much difference it makes. Like, is saliva better than sweat? I mean, I know as a player, if I was sweating quite a lot, I would very rarely, if ever, even use saliva. Because if you're sweating off your brow, I mean, you know, you shine the ball up well and present the seam, you know, it would invariably swing. But, you know, with the Kookaburra ball in Australian conditions, it never really swung for more than, you know, the first 8 to 10 overs anyway. Yeah. Then your focus would be on trying to get the ball to reverse swing. So then, you know, and look, I mean, I don't know how many theories there are out there about reverse swing, but You know, I certainly found the most effective time to get reverse swing was to shine the shiny side that you've been shining throughout. Keep the rough side as rough as possible. Let it deteriorate. But you were very much you had to rely on conditions somewhat, and particularly squares. You know, and the centre square is basically the thing of the past in Australia now. Because of drop in pitches. So that's why I think it is becoming harder to have reverse swing. I remember Adelaide Oval, we used to have a lot of pitches, and there were some that were used pitches and whatnot, and the ball would be hit there from the batters or fielders throwing the ball in. It would naturally deteriorate the ball, and it was a great place to get reverse swing. So, yeah, I've kind of gone off topic here a little bit. But I think the answer to your question in a way, you know, if the ball's going to swing, I think it does come down to the individual bowlers. We've seen James Anderson swinging the ball pretty consistently throughout this test match because he's a very good exponent of it. He presents the seam, you know, shining the ball with sweat. I don't know if he used back sweat, but, you know, you can get the ball to swing. I don't think it's going to be as big an issue as people may think.
What I love about your answer there, Dizzy, is that you kicked off the answer to the question by saying, "Oh, look, I'm not really sure. I'm too big on any of the theories or anything like that." And then, 15 minutes later, you've given an appraisal of every single different theory and from different countries and different areas.
I went off on a massive tangent then.
Well, I just want to know, don't apologise. I just want to. These are the sorts of hard hitting interviews we do, but just want to know where you sit on the cricket Nuffy spectrum now, as an identity. Do you like to present as someone who's a bit above it, or, you know, 200 plus test wickets, etc., you know, you just present the same, or underneath, is there a little bit of a theories man in there?
That's a really good question. is this where I say I'm really not sure how to answer, and then I spend the next 15 minutes giving an answer?
You kind of gave it away.
Yeah. And here's why I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the question again?
I love that we've spoken about Black Lives Matter, Rodney Hogg, and this is the one where you're going to say no comment.
No, I think everyone, to an extent, has a bit of a theory on how things, how the game should be played, or how things should be done. But it's you know, everyone, I suppose, has an opinion and has a theory, don't they?
Well, obviously you've got a good relationship, Dizzy, with Jofra, obviously coaching down at Sussex. How do you reckon he's going so far in his Test career? I mean, he didn't spend a lot of time swinging the ball in the second innings there. These West Indian compatriots, just bouncing the fuck out of them. Basically, I mean,
bowling scary.
Yeah, bowling scary. That was right arm scary. I mean, how do you sort of assess his start to his Test career?
Well, I think he's done really well. You know, of course, it's early days, and he's going to have good days. He's going to have not so good days. And look, you've got to remember, he hasn't played a lot of first class cricket. He's still pretty, you know, very early days in his first-class career, let alone international career. So he's going to have some good days. He's going to have some... Well, he's going to be inconsistent. But he'll learn to improve that over time. There's no doubt. I mean, the package is there. He bowls fast. He bowls very tall at the crease. He's very upright. He's got that brace front leg, and he bowls from very tall. So that's where he gets that steep bounce. You know, and he presents a seam. He can swing the ball. He can swing it both ways. I think this test, he's probably shown, he's just been looking to angle the ball into the right-handers and across the left-handers. But look, he's got the skills. And the only way he's going to learn and develop and get better is by playing more. And, you know, I sense that England are going to play him a lot more. It'll be interesting to see whether they pick him and Mark Wood in the same side going forward. Because there was a lot of debate about whether Stuart Broad should have been left out and the like. But I can see why they went. You know, it's exciting. You see two guys bowling north of 90 mile an hour. It's exciting. But I think moving forward, I think England, that'll be, I think, their decision to make is can they have had the luxury of those two, you know, express bowlers in their side.
I'm just really curious, Dizzy, before we finish up, about the kind of seems to be an undercurrent of suggestion that sometimes Jofra's up for it, sometimes he's not, and it occurs to me that, like, it's a little bit more complicated than that. You know, when you are an express fast bowler and you have to turn over, like, you know, you have to turn up day after day, that managing your body and your energy and stuff is probably something you've got to think about. And Jofra's 100% maximum effort is nasty, frightening, scary, and amazing. Do you what's your view on the difference between his kind of his best and his worst, and how should we be understanding that, you know, early on in his career?
I think, you know, I've seen a little bit of suggestion that, you know, sometimes maybe looks like he's not not putting in 100% effort or just cruising, and, you know, I don't necessarily buy that. I think that's a perception that people have, and I think sometimes players of West Indian origin suffer that, because if you think all the great West Indian cricketers, you know, that they have that carefree, laid back approach, but they're some of the most dedicated and you know, up for the contest cricketers you'll ever come across. But I think because they've got that laid back kind of demeanour about them, it doesn't mean they're not competitive. I remember playing a lot of cricket with and against Paul Rifle, and people would always say how he's a laid-back, sort of laconic type of character. But tell you what, he was one of the most competitive cricketers that I ever played with or against. And, you know, I see some similarities with Jofra, and having coached him and got to know him a bit, you know, he's a very driven character. He's a very driven man. He wants to succeed. Gee, I don't know. I know as a bowler, you know, I could hit 145k an hour. I could hit 90 mile an hour, but I found that no matter how hard I tried, there were just days where the ball wasn't quite coming out, and I couldn't. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't reach those speeds. And there are other days where I felt, oh, okay, things are feeling okay, and I look up at the speed gun and I've hit 145, and you know, I think most bowlers would say the same. I know Brett Lee was like that. I remember some days he was steaming in and you know, the speed gun would say he was by 140. And other days he's just cruising in nicely. He's got good rhythm and, you know, he's nudging 150. So, you know, I think it's pretty harsh to judge an express bowler, on that, because, you know, some days you're just putting in all the effort and, you know, you may not see that effort rewarded with the speed gun.
I think that's really well explained. Dizzy, thanks for giving us more time than we requested of you from down there in South Australia, mate. Nice to cover all that territory and then to make a final link between Jofra Archer and Paul Rifle. Didn't expect that. There you go.
I aim to please.
Hugh Jarden, 6 for 9 at Cockermouth. That's Ben Stokes' old club, isn't it? Cockermouth Cricket Club.
Ezra, of course, none of this would be possible without our very good friends at Budgie Smuggler. We're talking
just
customs.
None
smugglers.
Of it would be possible.
I mean, we could do it.
Yeah, it's possible.
But, like, why?
At this point.
You know, it's winter, it's cold. In here it is anyway.
Capitalism.
Exactly, it's capitalism. Anyway, custom smugglers. You got some ideas you were telling me about some custom smugglers. You actually written some down. You wrote
no,
ideas.
No. These are all purely off the top of my head. Okay. I don't know what I'm about
just
to say.
Just spare time
yet.
Stuff?
Yeah. Just off the top of my head. Okay. I think about custom smugglers, as I'm sure many of the audience do, but yeah. Through Budgie Smuggler, you can obviously make your own design.
If you want to.
You don't have to take the designs that they, you know, push towards you. Yeah. Take matters into your own hands.
Get out of my face.
It's 2020.
Let me do my own thing.
You know?
Yeah.
40, 50 years ago, a lot of the music out there was about, you know, the great, you know, tradition of Motown and stuff was all about, you know, wanting a man, wanting a woman, wanting something bigger than you. You know, yeah. I can't live without you. Now, Beyonce and stuff is all like, you know, I do this on my own.
Yeah,
you
know,
if you do like it, put a ring on it, etc.
Yeah, if you do, that's
take matters
choice.
Into your own hand. Now, some people might say that's actually culture going wrong, but I am digressing. Here are the sorts of things in the news this week that I think could live on a budgie smuggler, like a custom smuggler,
okay,
if you will.
Stuff.
Yeah, just this is off the top of my head. Okay. Jason Holder's smile.
Yeah,
put that on your budgies.
Pretty good. Yeah,
Joe Denley's biceps.
He had a bruise on his bicep. You notice that?
I didn't know.
It was his front arm, so his left arm.
Okay. You've looked closely there.
I look closely. You've zoomed in. You look good.
Okay. Oh, that's high praise.
Okay, praise Joe Denley's bicep.
Okay, yeah. Joe Denley's biceps. Fucking hell. Tim Payne's face following skin regime application.
Of course.
Trump in a mask.
Yeah.
An ugly game of AFL.
What does that look like?
Just heaps of players in a small area.
Okay.
Jeff Kennett versus Peter Vlandis. Yeah. Another Sydney v Melbourne thing.
Yeah, okay.
Or Hugh Jardine 6 for 9 at Cockermouth for Cockermouth. It's Ben Stokes' old club, wasn't it?
He bowled well that day, Hugh. He just pitched him up. You got to pitch up in the UK. Shannon Gabriel hit the stumps. budgiesmuggleuk.com. Pezza, new sponsor on board of the podcast, Wisden. Wisden Cricket Monthly Magazine. What does Wisden mean to you, Pezza?
He goes, I mean, Wisden is dad. Wisden is daddy.
Wisden's daddy. It's the not to be confused with Dada, whose birthday it was.
That's right, Sourav Ganguly. Yeah. No, not to be confused with Sourav Ganguly, but yes. No, Wisden, different just thing. That name,
yeah.
Is it's epic. It's fatherly, it's godfatherly,
yeah.
Of cricket. And it is amazing that there is now a relationship between
synergy. Yeah.
The great cricketer in Wisden, but we are extremely happy to be bringing the story of Wisden to this podcast and endorsing them because, frankly, they're still putting out some incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Not just the epic collection every year that you get in that massive yellow binder.
Iconic.
Yeah, but they also do a Cricket Monthly, the Wisden Cricket Monthly, and they're doing a digital version that we have permission now to let you guys know about. If you go to bit.ly, you guys will know what that is, but bit.ly/WCMgrade, you're going to get 6 issues of Wisden Cricket Monthly for just £9.99, or in Australian, that's $14.99, a 100-page magazine every month for just £1.67, or in Australian, it's $2.50.
Yeah, $2.50.
A month, compatible on all major devices. Yep. So that's a digital subscription.
Yep.
Independent voice of cricket, modern magazine, most famous names in cricket writing. Had a look at the last one. It is actually chock-a-block full of stuff, long-form writing, short-form writing, stats, whatever you name it. If cricket is what you want, this is what you get. This is what you get.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
It's amazing. It's an amazing deal. Pezza, again, the URL to quote, what is it?
bit.ly/WCMgrade. The August issue is out on July 23. It's got an exclusive interview with Steve Smith. So if you're an Aussie and you actually like Steve Smith, you're going to love that. If you're an English person and just want the schadenfreude of some of the bad things that have happened to Steve Smith, you're going to get that too.
Couldn't think of one.
Either way, great time to give the magazine a go. And a great, I'm just extremely happy to be allied with the name Wisden and the great cricketer.
Normal stuff again.
Really normal.
All right, Pezza, hashtag AskTGC. Favorite time of the week, as I keep saying every time. Thanks for all the lovely people who wrote in. Lots of people saying nice here that the podcast come back through the earwaves. Through the earwaves. It's like airwaves, but through your ears, so it's kind of different. I now write things for Trump. There's a couple of wonderful AskTGCs here. Who's on the first one? Me or you? I'll do it. Connor Lamb writes in. He says, hey, boys, great to hear the cast again. This email comes bearing slightly sad news. After a long and taxing wait for several test results, I've recently been diagnosed with acute leukemia. Obviously, this hasn't been the easiest of times for me and my family, but my dad even takes me to the doctor.
Drives
me to the doctor, which is nice. He waits in the car. One of the first questions that came to mind upon hearing this news was whether or not this is good enough excuse to get out of training. Fucking hell. If my time at all is to be cut short in this life, I'm not sure I'd like to spend it not getting thrown the ball while fielding it square leg and being given out to not quite getting down in the wet Irish grass to one. Nor do I want to open myself up to any leukemia-related sledges. Getting ready for some broken fucking blood cells and that. Oh my God. That's the darkest thing I've ever read. Or should I just go around again, considering I might be allowed to bat higher up the order out of some sort of pity, a cancer-based selection, as it were.
Oh, fuck.
All the best, Connor.
Oh, mate.
I like that he said all the best, looking out for us. Fucking hell, Connor.
Connor, that's very tough news, brother. We appreciate the extra commitment to dark humour in those circumstances. It's a very good question that you ask. Obviously, it's one that we all ask. You know, should I go around again?
Yeah.
and it's got particular relevance to you with that news. But with that, like, I'm reading what you've written here, and I'm thinking, like, with that in mind, like, I'm thinking from what you've written, you're the sort of person, if you're the sort of person prepared to dream up someone directing cancer-themed sledges at you. Yeah. Even though you say you don't want those sledges, like, then maybe there's no better time for you to be playing, because your mindset feels ripe to me. You know, like, you're starting to talk. You're getting into the groove mentally now this news. Like, you're saying, look, I can manipulate this situation to bat in my preferred position.
Mm.
And, like, that's exactly the attitude, as we know, that produces peak performance.
As we know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my suspicion is that you should play, because this is going to be the best season yet. Your mind is in the right place. You've got these sledges dreamed up, although they're at you.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready to manipulate people to go up the order. Like, how is that not synonymous with someone succeeding wildly? But also, you know, from us, huge power to you, and you're in our thoughts. And if you do decide to play, please give us updates.
Yeah, please, Connor. That'd be wonderful. You know, like, when you have, like, arguments in your head with people that don't even exist, or, like, arguments don't take, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
In this scenario, Connor's kind of said, like, I'm going to get sledged. There's going to be leukemia-related sledges. And you kind of think, that's just fanciful. But it's cricket does happen. Like, if anywhere in society that, like, someone could sledge you for cancer-related reasons, it would be coming from second slip with a bloke. Now I'm making it up. He's got Oakleys on. He's got zinc. Not to tarnish Oakley the brand with people who sledge people with cancer, but, you know.
Fuck, man. I reckon that's even gone past my ceiling for that. If someone actually did that, I reckon that's even gone out of my realm of cynicism.
If you're playing in a team with someone who said that, you'd have to come out publicly and distance yourself from those comments.
Publicly,
you'd have to publicly do that. I distance myself from that comment. Yeah. But then the kind of guy who would say that, you'd be like, well, if you get to know him, he's not.
You'd love him on your team.
Love him on your
side.
That
sort of guy.
Yeah.
I want you to get to know him. He's a really good bloke.
Just competitive.
Yeah. Davis Verboon writes in. And thank
strong
you again
name.
For that. That was a great post, Connor. Thank you very much. Davis Verboon writes in. Dear RTGC, just a thought. Is a reverse triple C equally as commendable as a regular triple C?
Okay.
For example, Friday night circuit and chop into a Saturday century. To back up and ton up after a Friday on the circuit seems somewhat significantly more difficult in this order, and thus a greater achievement. Moreover, this beckons the scenario of a double triple C, so to speak, a circuit chop, century circuit chop, within the space of one weekend. Or are we venturing into the realms of an outlandish imaginary scenario that for a grade cricket is not feasibly plausible? Thoughts?
The answer to that question, Davis, is yes, that is not feasibly plausible. That is outlandish.
Feasible would have done.
I think actually his initial comment of, like, sort of reverse engineering the Friday night circuit in chop into a Saturday century is actually far more likely. Well, so, like, in my days, like, Friday night's the best night of the week to go out. Back in the days when you could go out. I think I've spoken about this heaps in the past, but, like, yeah, the amount of times I went out on a Friday massively trumped Saturday. Coming home, if you have a long drive back home after a tough away game, cricket, whites, you're fielding.
Yeah.
You don't really want to go out, and you probably don't really want to go out with your teammates. It might be different if you're playing a home game, maybe a function. But if you have a function, you're around other cricketers, you're not really meeting.
People say, well, let's go back to the club, and you've sort of, have you tubbed? You might not have tubbed. You go back, you haven't done that well, you're tired.
It doesn't set it up for a great night. Whereas Friday,
usually on your P's, you can't have anything.
Exactly. But on a Friday, you're ready to go from, like, 11 a.m. If you're working, like, in any job, corporate life, with your hands, whatever, anything. Friday, you're ready to go. And then, By the time 5 o'clock comes around, you're ready to circuit hard, and then it gets to about 4 a.m. and you're like, gotta play cricket tomorrow. So what I'm saying is that, like, the Friday chop into a Saturday century is far more likely than the triple C.
Circuit chop centuries. Okay, I completely disagree.
You'd be wrong.
And it's not technically reverse the way that Davis Verboon has written it anyway. No. So that's the first problem.
Right.
The official order, let's get this right, the official order is century, circuit, chop.
Yes.
That's how it was written. So the reverse would be chop, circuit, century. Now, it could conceivably happen if you, say, had liaisons before heading out in the circuit, probably with a partner.
An escort.
You know? Okay. Then... then... then
that doesn't count, though.
Like, yeah, so like, let's
you can't procure The chop.
Well, that's right, you know, but yeah, like a chop circuit century is the official way to reverse a triple C.
Yeah.
So liaison before heading out in the circuit and then ton up the next day. I don't see it working because the triple C, the actual triple C, is like the circuit of life. One act informs and flows into the other. You circuit after your century, and as a result of your century, you chop after you circuit. The magic of each act is informed by the former act. That's my view. So all of this reverse engineering, this double triple C, like this is a sort of, like that's the beginning of the end stuff. That's the end of Western civilization stuff. No, there's no reverse triple C unless you do it in the precise order, in which case you probably have a partner also, and it's not as kind of, it's not as magical.
Any Chop King worthy salt is chopping on a Friday night and then the hard bit becomes a century, which is actually probably most times for any cricketer.
And that's what I'll give a quadruple C, chop, century, circuit, chop.
The rhythm in which you said that.
But I do think the thing you do beforehand feeds into the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The chop you have the night before the century, they have nothing to do with each other. Yeah. If you get one,
yeah,
congratulations if you do.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, as long as it's respectful and all that. Yeah, that's fine. But that's got nothing to do with 100 you score the next day. Whereas you circuit after the ton because you've scored a ton. And then you shop after the circuit, which is a result of the century and the circuit you've just had.
What about if you didn't sleep on the Friday?
That still counts.
Yeah.
As long as you execute.
Anonymous writes in. All right, lads, welcome back. I know you can see my name, but for the sake of this, let's call me Total Village Leg Spinner / Chopper / Chat Merchant, who, despite peaking age 11, more on that later, continues to believe he can one day perform to a level that will pay back in pride the countless hours his dad put into his game through car rides, practices, and the like as a youngster. Not fucking likely. Anyway, what with this lockdown shit, obviously I've been smashing through the swipes on various apps and got chatting to this one particular person. Realizing I wouldn't be able to actually go out for drinks, yuck, for at least 4 to 6 weeks, I faced the challenge of determining whether do I have enough chat to keep this interesting over Instagram DMs and a couple of video chats, probably not, and if so, is it even worth it? Obviously, a Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn search has given me some answers, but seeking more clarity, I drop a broad Google search, and what do I fucking see? A play cricket link. Doth mine eyes deceive me?
Shakespeare out of nowhere for a guy that calls himself the chat merchant. Throws in Shakespeare.
The preceding words before that was a play cricket link. This potential Hinge sweetheart has, on record, played for a major county under 13 girls team 10 years ago. Obviously checked out the stats, 14 not out and 1 for 4 from 3 overs. Decent, a start and economical. My mind darts. Reckon she still plays? Reckon she's any good with a sidearm? This could be huge. Then the sickening part. As mentioned, my peak was a similar county level, but at under 10s and 11s. This being this girl is officially a better cricketer than me and played to a higher level. How the fuck am I supposed to handle that as a fragile alpha who's crippled by a sense of not being anywhere near as good as he thinks he is, that if he played on the same team as his 10-year-old self, he'd get ripped for being so, so much of an inferior player? My question, therefore, is this. Do I keep the chat going, accidentally find out she played a bit of cricket, and post-lockdown look to form a healthy, functioning dating relationship with the hope that one day we might together finally work through the technical flaws that saw me play on bold 4 times last season? Or am I forced to cut ties immediately for the fear that if her superior cricketing status ever came to light, it would be the type of ego crippling and what's that?
Anagnorisis?
Crippling anagnorisis, from which very rarely do men recover. Thoughts. Cheers. Love the show. Well, he stumped me there with anagnorisis.
Just looking up anagnorisis here. It's a moment in a plot or story, specifically a tragedy, wherein the main character either recognizes or identifies his or her true nature, recognizes the other character's true identity, discovers the true nature of his situation or that of others, leading to the resolution of the story.
When I first saw that, I thought it was a completely different word, but anagnorisis, I've never even seen that word before. Well, touche.
This
heaps going on there,
mate. This post is a real conundrum because just for the listeners out there, it's written in all lowercase with all sorts of bad grammar, but then you've just got Shakespeare references and anagnorisis in there.
Yeah.
So I just want to get this straight, Anonymous.
Yep.
You're a fragile alpha in your own words.
Doesn't make any sense.
Who, after a couple of texts via a dating app with a woman, has started working through multiple hypothetical relationship scenarios after looking up their play cricket stats from when they were 13.
Yep.
That's very concerning.
Very concerning.
It kind of reminds me of like Joaquin Phoenix's The Joker. Mm-hmm. When he starts ideating his like relationship with a woman in his apartment block.
Except swap
the Joker for an English village cricketer.
Yep.
Possibly more dangerous.
Yeah, that was frightening, that bit.
But to be honest, like based on this, I'd be very surprised if Anonymous was mentally and emotionally able to handle this scenario.
Yeah.
He goes like, but maybe it would be good for him if he was able to recognize this. Like, you know, I'm just thinking like, given he asked to be introduced as a total village leg spinner slash chopper slash chat merchant.
Yes.
Which is three completely different identities.
Yes.
There may be an identity issue here. Like maybe it's time to overcome the fragile alphadom, accept a healthy dating relationship with a former county cricketing woman and embrace that your soon-to-be girlfriend is just better at cricket than you.
I think the answer here that it's already over before it begun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful question, don't get me wrong. But like as soon as you start going real deep into the searches, you start buying, you start seeing yourself in this relationship, he's talking about sidearms, this sort of thing, it's already over, bro.
All over the place. So it's all over. She's going to give me sidearms or is she better than me?
You can't look up someone on Facebook, LinkedIn, do a Google search and then be like, this is a completely normal thing to know all these things about you before I've ever met you. Then like in conversations, you're just like, oh, you know, just one day they'd be walking down. You took a 3 foot, didn't you, in 2007?
You wouldn't be able to help it.
You wouldn't be able to help it. Just slip in.
These guys have literally exchanged like 3 messages on Hinge. Or something.
She's talking to like 15 other guys, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so are you.
Yeah.
So.
Better. Yeah. You've done 3 messages and you're literally all over a play cricket from 10 years ago. That's why it's soft my eyes deceive me. That's a great line.
Well, I've learned a new word today and I've also learned that Anonymous is still single for the time being, but hang in there. I mean, dating apps and quarantine, it doesn't go hand in hand. Yeah. This is what happens. Well, you just get bored.
Yeah.
Swiping endlessly. He's talking before, he's like swiping endlessly. A couple of video chats, yeah, but what's it leading to? Where's the end game? Sidearms? I don't see it.
What's happening with you with dating apps?
I'm off them at the moment.
Right. I saw you get a message before, but it was a Bitcoin update.
Yeah, I'm getting junk. Or am I? Well, slide into the DMs if you're out there.
Yeah, that's good.
Another
that's
great advertisement. Yeah, that's what it's become. All right. Monty, brilliant. Dizzy, brilliant. Everyone else, thanks for your SAR CDCs. Hang in there, Connor. We'll see you guys next week.